CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. I am coming to you live from my cold house, and Mash is coming to you live from the cold studio, although he was just saying it's warm in there. And here's an interesting thing I discovered yesterday. Apparently the cheapest and best way to warm a room. Guess. You want to guess what it is? It's not what you think it is. It's air conditioning. Apparently, that is the best way to do it. We were talking to someone yesterday, and he said to me, actually, the most cost-effective way, the best heater that you can get for a room, is the air conditioner. And we can prove that because you're sitting in a studio now where there's just the air con, and it gets warmer quicker.
That is true, yeah.
And it burns less electricity than a heater. So there we go.
Does it burn less electricity?
Mm-hmm. That's what
Wow. So that means that everything we've heard was just lies, basically.
What everything? Because there's so much bullshit going around at the moment. You have to identify which bullshit. Yeah.
So I've always heard that air cons eat so much electricity. People I know with air cons always tell me that they only turn them on like once a year.
Right.
So I always thought that, I guess this thing is pretty... It's a lot of electricity, basically.
No, so it turns out that that's probably the most cost-effective one that you can use. And then all those other heaters, the gas heaters, the electric heaters, the bar heaters, the ones that work with, hot air, for example, not as good. Not as good because the amount of electricity required to generate that heat is, there's so much wastage, apparently. That's what they say. So there we go. There's some useful information for you first thing in the morning. We also got Simpiwe joining us in just a second. Later on in the show, we're going to speak to the author of this book. It is called Holding My Breath, Further Exploits of an ER Doctor, Dr. Anne Bicard, who we've had on the show before, and she was so great, and we loved talking to her so much that we decided we'd get her back to talk a little bit about her book today. That's going to be fun. And then also a little bit later on, we've got Africanalysis with JJ Cornish, which is going to be lots of fun too. So we've got a busy day up ahead. Simpiwe, it looks very smart there. You've rearranged that little the little studio to make it to make it look like your. That looks very nice. Well, it's very very pretty.
Looks very good.
A pretty girl needs a pretty background.
Damn right. That looks good.
See. Yes.
Simpiwe is basically on the opposite side of the building to where Mash is right now. Is it cold where you are on that side, or are you also warm there?
It's quite warm. I've even taken off my jacket. Like that's when you know that I am comfortable.
Very nice.
I am warm.
Very nice.
The only thing that's missing is a good cup of tea right now, but I'll get that later.
Yeah, that'll be great.
All right, so... So we've now dealt with all the things that are coming up on the show a little bit later on. That's always good to know because then you know what you're in for. But we've got all the room in the world for you to suggest anything that you would like to have on the show at some point. And I always say this, but we don't say it often enough. So like, subscribe, and comment, and tell us what you want on the show. We want to make sure it's as interesting and exciting and insightful as it could possibly be for you. We never want to get to the stage where you join us in the morning and you go, okay, I've learned nothing, or that wasn't hilarious, or that would be pointless. Then what's the point of us waking up? We may as well just do this 3 days a week or whatever. So we want to know what you like and what you're into and what you want to hear about. Why is no one talking about biofuel anymore as an alternative to petrol? Well, okay, so Mash and I had a brief conversation before the start of the show this morning, and we said there are two things that we feel like we can't talk about anymore because it's just over, right, Mash? I mean, what do we say that we haven't already said? So they tell us yesterday petrol is going up, and not just by a little bit, but by a lot. And I feel like we're in this twilight zone where we keep, like, the same bad news keeps coming. I mean, they're talking about rolling blackouts now in parts of the country, which are going to continue, the electricity crisis. And the Central Energy Fund, on behalf of South Africa's Energy Department, announced fuel price increases for July, with substantial increases for motorists driving petrol and diesel vehicles. Like, what other kinds of vehicles do you get? Electric, which, like, what... 1% of South Africans have. 1% of the South Africans who drive. Unleaded 93 petrol will increase by R2.37 a litre on Wednesday, that's tomorrow, while unleaded 95 will be R2.57 more expensive. the inland petrol price will go up to over 26 rand a litre, 25 rand at the coast. Diesel wholesale prices will also increase substantially, with 50 ppm going up by 2 rand 30 per litre and 500 ppm increasing by 2 rand 31. So get ready, everybody. You know, as if you didn't have enough to worry about. But I don't want us to keep talking about this. What else are we going to say?
I mean, there's nothing else to say. We're at a point where, even on Twitter, I always see every day, yesterday especially, hashtag national shutdown was trending, and they were basically planning a shutdown of everything just to protest the rising prices of fuel, to protest load shedding, to just protest everything. And it's gotten to a point where all they do is just talk on Twitter.
Well,
nothing ever happens.
But also, like, what are these protesters hoping to achieve? We've got some of the dumbest people in power and in leadership in this country. We already have very stupid people. Like, what are you going to do? Who are you protesting against? Oh, there goes the power for CPU and MASH. But watch. Dum, 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 dum. MASH is back. Where's Simpue? Simpue, are you going to be in the dark forever? We've got such dumb people in leadership, though, MASH. I mean, while we're waiting for Simpue to rejoin us, what do these guys want? Do they think their protest is going to make Vladimir Putin stop invading the Ukraine? Do they think that it's going to stop Joe Biden from trying to find alternative ways to get fuel out of the ground in America? Like, what do they think is going to happen, these dummies? And how do they think bringing the economy to its knees is going to help anybody? Because all it's going to do is make those few people who still have jobs in South Africa suffer. It's going to make the roads difficult to travel on. It's going to make administration difficult. It's going to cause blockages and delays. How do they think that's going to help? So who are we protesting against? The government? They didn't arbitrarily.
They clearly haven't.
They don't know how it works. They don't know how it works.
Thought this through.
Yeah. But also, no one sat them down and explained how the economy works, which is a big problem for a lot of people in South Africa. Like, economics is hard, but it's not that hard. Most South Africans, even like South Africans who have low paying jobs and who perhaps don't have a high level of education, they know what they're owed every month for a salary. They know what their expenses are. They know how to manage their money. South Africans are quite wily about that stuff. We're not stupid people. So if you sat us down and explained to us, hey guys, listen, this is how the economy works. This is how, if things happen this way, it goes up. If it goes that way, it goes down. You know, these are the things that we need to do. And we wouldn't have these dumb unions who would be saying, we're going to strike. Or like civil society initiatives going, we're going to protest. Against who and for what, guys? It's not going to help anybody. So
it's not going to change a single thing. So just complaining and complaining forever and without actually coming up with actual solutions is not going to change anything in this country.
Right,
it's not going to change anything anyway.
No, spot on. So Celeste says the president will be in East London for the mass funeral tomorrow of all those kids who died in the Enyo Benny tavern situation. Such a disgrace. I wonder how he will be received, the president, because these days, wherever he goes, he's not met by like cheering crowds, right? He's met by pretty angry people.
That is true. So we'll just have to wait and see. But hopefully, this time around, he just doesn't tell people what they want to hear, because we've been getting a lot of that in this country, just being told what we want to hear just to shut us up.
Placating. They're trying to placate us. That's the language that we're talking about here. All right, well, we've got some African analysis later on. We'll look at whether it's us or whether it's the rest of the continent that are also feeling this pressure. But there are other things that we need to talk about too. We want to hear from you on the comments section if you're on the YouTubes. Otherwise, you can email us, contact@cliffcentral.com. Ah, there she is. Simpiwe is back. What happened? Did they disconnect you?
Yes. The joys of living in South Africa, you know, one day, or not even one day, 1 second it's lights and then it's like pitch black afro.
Okay, so Mary Mulema says, morning Gareth, I've not watched the show live in a while, but Mash Kimang. So Mash Mashiani is part of our team at Cliff Central. He's actually been in the background working away for months with us. And we decided, what the hell, we're going to put him on And he has some interesting points of view. And he was on for the first time ever 2 weeks ago. And we decided, let's get him on again. And we were going to have Bakabantu on today, but he, guess what, has load shedding in the Eastern Cape. So he will not be joining us today. And we thought, well, what we'll do is we'll move Mash and Simpiwe from Wednesday to Tuesday. You know, like any business, we're dealing with trying to make the thing work while load shedding is screwing us around. So we'll have Bakabantu on Thursday. We got Michael Flax joining us tomorrow. Got a nice full week for you on the show. So don't worry. There's always something going on. Okay. So Dogoza says, I was so insulted by how much my gauge moved after I poured 200 rands petrol into my car this morning. Yeah.
You mean how it didn't move? It doesn't
move.
Yeah,
I think that's what he means.
When that E,
it just goes to the top of the E. Yeah.
200 rand is like pouring 50 rand now.
It is, right?
It's nothing. It's like about, 4 liters? It's ridiculous. Like, it's like, what? When did we get you? Guys, the cost of fuel.
That's crazy.
And I was thinking of it yesterday about how just a few years ago, 100 bucks, well, 120 rand rather, got you about 6 liters of fuel. Way more than that.
Yeah.
Way more than that. About 8 liters a few years ago.
Well,
now it barely gets you even 5.
No, look, it's going to be tough. And, you know, again, what people don't seem to understand, it's not just people who drive cars who are affected by this, because what happens is that the price of everything goes up when the price of petrol goes up. And it may be worth, actually, we'll plan something for you today. Try and get an economist on to just explain how this stuff works. Like I was saying to Mash at the start of the show, none of us really in South Africa get a proper grounding in economics. And the more we can talk to smart people and they can explain these concepts to us, the more we can get out there and explain them to other people, hopefully create some understanding. And then we'll all go, oh, okay, now we get why that happens. And we'll know who to blame. We won't just be mindlessly protesting in the streets. You know, because that's not doing anything.
Like, I don't know if you guys know how much the cost of bread is at this moment in time, but that's also something that's super expensive.
Almost
and
20,
it's one of those items
20
where,
rand a loaf, right?
It's 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what? When did
it's
we
20
get
rand.
To 20?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Jeez. It's about 20, a loaf of bread. So you can just imagine how expensive everything else is if a loaf of bread is 20 rand.
Yeah.
Living in interesting times.
All right, so I asked what people want to hear about on the show, and Robert Cunningham says, we want to hear an interview with the owner of a swingers club, okay? And then Robert is very keen on that. He said, a discussion about swingers clubs in 2022 post-pandemic. You're very into these swingers clubs, eh, Robert? And Cunning Stunt says, 5-minute interviews with small businesses, and yeah, the swingers thing. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Now we know.
We clearly know what the audience.
That's what
is
people
into.
Want.
Give the people what they want. When are we starting the Cliff Central Swingers Club?
Exactly.
Oh, you want to start the Cliff Central Swingers Club?
Like, oh God, no, we don't
you
want
know,
that.
Talking to an owner and starting one is very different.
No, I think we don't mind speaking to the owner. We don't want to start our own, right, Sipiwe? We don't have that kind of infrastructure.
Of yeah, and I think because we're such a small, intimate team, I think that would be a bit too intimate. I think we would know a bit too much about each other now. So, no.
No.
No, guys.
No. Lockdown shouldn't have brought us that close together. All right. All right, so here's the big news of the morning. We've discussed a lot over the past couple of months. Simpiwe's dating arrangements. We discussed Mash's dating arrangements just yesterday. So here it is. Dun-da-da-da-da-da-da. Simpiwe has finally joined Tinder. She's got on the dating app. Yeah, she's on. She's on. So how's it going? Because you're obviously still in the honeymoon phase of the app. You know, you're still getting used to it. The app is getting used to you. It's trying to figure out what you like. You have to swipe a lot of lefts and rights, I believe, before it even starts to make sense. So has this been a terrible move, or are you so far quite happy?
At this moment in time, I think it's going okay, I've gotten a few matches and I am talking to a few guys. And yes, there's like a date lined up very soon. So that's cool. And we'll see how that goes. Right. And I actually wanted to pick Mash's brain because since he's the expert on going on dates, you know, he had four on dates.
He had four in like one day.
I'd like to know, like, what are some of your first date questions that I should ask or you would recommend, Mash, because you're the expert when it comes to dating.
Well, in terms of a first date, the questions you should ask, there's not really a blueprint for it. Depends on the person, depends on the conversation, the direction the chat is going. But I would say always start with their background. Just to get a good sense of the kind of person they are, ask about their family, ask about their siblings and so forth, and then get to them currently. So what do they do for a living and all of that? And then just work your way to their hobbies. Reason why is because you want to get a good foundation of the kind of person you're talking to before you actually start getting to know their personality and their interests and their hobbies and so forth. So, yes, start at the foundation. So basically start from the upbringing. Start from the upbringing is what I'm saying.
I think that's very good. That, you know what? We could have a stupid discussion about this, but I think what Mash has just said is really smart because these are also the questions that you would ask of someone who you want to take seriously, whether it's in a relationship, whether it's as a friend.
Yeah.
Whether it's in business, you want to know what someone's background is because then you can figure out whether they're the kind of person you'd actually want to be around. If they come from an absolute like hellscape where people are just fighting the whole time, everybody hates each other, there's no connection to family. Like I know how close you are, Simpiwe, to your gran, for example. So she's been a major influence in your life. And for you to find out that like somebody really hates his whole family when you meet him on Tinder, it would be like a major red, they call them red flags, right? So you gotta look out for those.
Yes.
And also,
I mean, if someone hates their family, who are you? You know what I mean?
I know we always joke on the show about like, you know, you can't have someone who's going to end up like siphoning off your money or making you pay for everything. But the reality is like, if you find out someone has a job, it's not always a sign that they are a better person, but it is a sign that they can handle responsibility. So like if they have a stable job or even a really impressive job, it could be that they're the kind of person who will not mess you around. Now that's not always true, but you need to know in social arrangements, like what if you say to this guy, okay, listen, I've got half an hour tomorrow. Let's go for a coffee. And I can only do it at 10:30 in the morning. Like that's the only gap I've got. And then he like messages you at, 10:15 is like, oh, I'm not going to make it at 10:30. Can we make it 11? You know, those kinds of things will piss you off. And eventually you'll go, nah, this is not worth it. So you need to know whether the person's responsible or not. And then that other stuff that Mash is talking about, that's the fun stuff. It's like, what are your hobbies? What are you interested in? That whole getting to know you part of any relationship is probably my favorite part of it. Because that's where you like, you really get to like figure out this person. And they may be not your cup of tea, but the finding out is the exciting part, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes. Huh? No, the chatting part and actually getting to find out more about.
Otherwise, why meet new people? Otherwise, just keep meeting the same old people who you already know everything about. Half the reason we want to meet new people is because we want to figure out new stuff. You learn that way.
Yes, most definitely. I think this is why I even agreed to like join Tinder. Was like, I need to do something different, but it would be cool to meet, you know, people that might not necessarily be in my vicinity of how I typically meet people. So I'm very open to it. I have no expectations whatsoever, but I'll give you guys an update after my first date, and maybe we'll also be like Mash with 3, 4, 5, you know.
Well, the only advice that I did give Simpiwe though, regarding her Tinder experience is, first of all, step out of your comfort zone. Don't go for the exact type of person that you're used to going for, the exact type of person that you consider as your type, so to speak. So rather go for people who are actually outside of that, because they're the ones who will actually surprise you with interesting conversation and something different that you've never experienced before, as opposed to just another Tuesday, just another person who literally is like three of my exes.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. And okay. You know what? You might even bump into someone you know on I would say bump into, but like literally be swiping away. And then you'd be like, what? I didn't know that she was on there or he was on there. It gets pretty weird.
That's already happened, Garrett.
Really?
There's been like three guys that I actually know. two that I went to high school with. One that I've met like through work things. I'm like, ha!
I knew it.
You never say you. And then I was just like, nope.
I think there's a bit of there's a bit of Schadenfreude. There's a bit of feeling really good about yourself when you can swipe no on somebody that you used to like have a rivalry with at high school, or someone who thought they were too good for you at high school. You're like, actually, I'm gonna choose no. Which way is no, left or right?
Left.
I think it's left, and then right is yes.
Okay.
So right, it's kind of the like, right woo! Way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Yes. That's so a good way like, to remember.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah. But also, I mean, try swipe right on someone you know. You just never know. What if they swipe right on you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, honey. There's a reason why. If I know you and you haven't shot your shot, then let's keep it moving. Tinder's not going to bring us together. Like, right. No.
So no. Draconic says, women get easy matches, men not so much. I've heard, listen, a lot of my friends have complained that it hasn't worked out for them. They say it's very hard to find like quality girls on there because they either there's always baggage or there's complications or their profile picture isn't what they really look like. But I suppose girls will say this about guys as well.
Yeah, it works the same both ways.
Karen says,
yeah. And I guess
I met my husband on Tinder. So there we go. It can work out.
Okay. I like that story. Keep the good stories coming.
Ruth has got some interesting info here. She says, like, if you can't reach the person you're interested in after hours or at night, it's usually because they're married or not single. Ask if they are important. Yeah, you got to also, they mustn't be replying immediately, because then you know they've got nothing better to do, even though it's the most exciting thing when you are getting to know someone and you've given them your number. And you're chatting the whole time. But if they're doing that all the time, it means they don't have anything serious to do with their day. So there's a happy balance somewhere between, like, reply to me, I really want to hear from you, and this person is just on their phone the whole time. They clearly don't have serious things to get on with. So Corona's boring is just ruining it for everybody by reminding you to look out for serial killers. They look just like normal people, but they're serial killers. Thanks, Corona's boring. Nice to do that with
them. No, that's... Thank you. That's a very important note there.
Yes. Seven Kennedy.
Well, this is why we're not going to move in with anybody yet.
No, please.
Still doing public dates.
The only one who was going to do that was Mash. Yeah. Do public dates in safe places. Seven Kennedy says, when is Ben's sports show starting? Last I checked, you said in June. There are already episodes up on cliffcentral.com. Yes. So you need to go and find them. They're easy to find. Just go and look. They're, in fact, on the main page. You shouldn't have any trouble finding them. There are two episodes already up. You can check Spotify. It's called The State of Sport, if you want to go and have a look. It's very, very cool. And he's trying to do a different take on sport to what everyone else is used to. So let us know what you think. And also send Ben some feedback, too, of who you'd like him to talk to about the state of sport. It's also, of course, about the business of sport. So not just what happens on the field. And by the way, Ben was at Loftus on Saturday, so he has an inside track on what the game was like, the South Africa-Wales game. And he said it was loads and loads of fun. If you just follow his social media, he had a very good time. Okay, so parallel parking has some useful information here. First date
awesome
test
stuff.
To weed out the shallow androids. Hide their cell phone during the first date and see if they can still give you their full attention for the rest of the evening. Whew! Listen, if you hid my cell phone away, I would be a bit of a disaster because I'd think someone had stolen it. I would be worried about my banking details being on there. I'd be worried about how I'm going to replace it, whether I need to cancel certain things, bank cards, all of that stuff. So no, that's not a good philosophy, parallel parking. And if that's what you've done with people, then you don't deserve to go on a second date either.
I mean, I don't let someone I'm dating touch my phone. So
no, exactly.
That's not happening. So, like, but you also come across as a thief. It's like, well, first date, you're already hiding my things.
Funny.
Can I trust you with anything else?
That's not funny.
You know?
That's that is a shitty thing to do. Rather just say to them, I'd prefer if we put our phones away and see if they can actually pay attention to you without, like, trying to get to their phone the whole time. But if you actually steal their phone and hide it and then reveal it at the end, I think that's a horrible thing to do to somebody. Someone did that to me, I'd be like, yeah, this is the last time I'm ever seeing you again. Sorry. Not because I need to be on my phone, but because there's, you put someone in a state of panic. Like, you don't start off by saying to someone, no, you know, I just saw a message that someone you care about was in a car accident. Now, concentrate on me. That's a horrible way to behave. That's kind of psycho.
Yeah, and also a bit narcissistic. It's
It's psycho.
Who are you in my life right now? You're nobody.
No. Parallel parking, you're dangerous. I wouldn't go on a date with you. People like speaking about themselves, says Jean, and hearing their own name. Show sincere interest and ask people about themselves and them, you know, their things, whatever it is, depending on time and place. That is exactly right. The more you ask them about themselves, the more interesting they think you are. That's absolutely true.
That I know the one trick is just to keep quiet. They always say have an extra pause. So when someone has said something, you just like, and it will force them to say more.
That's a good idea.
So I do know that trick.
Yeah. One important litmus test I use is actually I ask someone about themselves and then I wait to see if they'll ask me back about myself. So sometimes you keep asking someone and you keep asking them and all they're doing is just responding. But they don't ask you anything about yourself. End of the day, you think to yourself, wow, you know nothing about me. You don't even know my surname, but you know, I know everything about you. So clearly you'll never be seeing me again.
The funny thing though about those dates is they'll say, oh, you know, he's such a great guy, even though they've not discovered a single thing about you. Because people are, people are so wrapped up in themselves. They actually don't pay any attention to anyone else. I'm afraid that's how it goes. So, does Tinder still use tiny blade writing? It's such a boring format, or has it changed? I don't know what that's all about. Is that the font that they use?
I wouldn't have a fucking clue what font they use. It's quite simple. There's a pictures, bio, age, interests. Then you get to swipe right or left. That's about it.
Like, I'll screenshot my phone for you if you need to see it. I've never had any of these dating apps on my phone, so I honestly have no idea. I'm the last person you should be asking for this stuff. All I can do is throw in, like, the basics of good conversation. I suppose that might be helpful. So Mash says, another Mash, this is Mash Mashinini, says, yeah, profile pics are deceiving. I've heard some people do video calls after chatting for a while, but before meeting in person. Thought it was a bit shallow, but maybe better to avoid disappointment. Yeah, you know, even in real life.
There's catfishes out there.
Yeah, they're catfishes, but I'm just thinking, like, you see one or two pictures and you think, oh, okay, this girl's really gorgeous, or this guy looks really good. And then when you see them for the first time, you're like, okay. That's a bit disappointing. That's happened to a friend of mine.
Muy bien fair.
He went out on a limb and kind of went on a, you could call it a blind date, because he'd only seen one picture of this girl. And then when he saw her, he was like, ooh, she's really not how she looked in her one picture. So you got to be careful. Because a lot of it, we discussed this, when was this? On Friday as well with Ben and Gord. Like, a lot of it is just down to attraction. If you're not attracted, you're not attracted. There's no point in you trying to make something happen if nothing's going to happen. It's a pointless waste of time.
Yeah. But also one important note is also do not string people along. If you're not actually attracted to someone after meeting them, despite the chats being really good,
just be honest.
Tell them right there.
Yeah.
Cut it off right there.
Right.
Yeah. And not ghosting either.
So we've got a few things we need to touch on in the headlines before we get to JJ and African analysis. So according to ENCA, eThekwini residents could also be facing blackouts in a month. Flood-damaged infrastructure has prevented power cuts. Municipalities rebuilding after the floods in April. And according to officials, eThekwini will only start bearing the brunt a month from now. So, I mean, I know people who have had power cuts in parts of KZN. Apparently, they were not going to do that all over the place because they felt sorry for people because of the floods. and they decided to give them some mercy. But now it turns out that they are going to have to roll out the blackouts there as well, because obviously Eskom is a disaster. We don't need to embellish this story. Everybody knows this. Our pointless, useless president, Cyril Ramaphosa, who's been smiling and glad-handing people in Botswana over the last few days, is expected to attend the mass funeral of 21 teenagers who died at the Enyobeni Tavern in East London over a week ago. I know why. Because this is what politicians do. I mean, if my children had died in a tragic situation like this, the last thing I would want is for a politician to be there. That would not make me feel better. Mm-hmm. That would make me feel worse. And I think that this guy is he'll be surprised. I would be surprised if people aren't hostile to him and any other politician being there, because the president says he's going to join the Eastern Cape Premier, Oscar Mabuyane, to comfort the grieving families. How is he being there going to comfort them? Anybody?
I don't like this. I don't like this at all, because the whole incident that happened at that tavern is quite tragic, and people are still trying to piece together what happened.
Yes.
And B, now you're going to have the president of the country come there. What are you going to say? Are you going to address us and be like, well, this must not happen again. We're going to ensure all taverns and whatnot. That's not what we want to hear right now. You're not needed. Go on and do what you're actually hired to do and run this country instead of going to funerals. And we'll appreciate that more than you just, you know, putting a fake facade of, I really care about my people.
Don't you get the distinct impression from the president that he is trying to stay away from this Eskom thing as much as possible? It is the single biggest issue for all of us, right? South Africans are furious. We can't cook our meals. We can't keep ourselves warm. We can't switch on the lights. We're stumbling, falling all over the place. Our businesses are falling apart. We can't keep food from going off in the fridge and the freezer. And what's he doing? He's running around looking for photo opportunities. And that's not what most South Africans want to see in their leader. I think he's making a terrible mistake here. But anyway, we'll see what happens. Now, here's a great story before we get to Jean-Jacques. This is something I didn't know about. Probably you didn't know it either. Business Insider South Africa is busy reporting a place called Centennial Schools, which opened in January of this year with a focus on esports, has created a 3 million rand arena with 1 gigabyte per second fiber. Students who take up esports must take an accompanying physical activity alongside it, so they won't just be sitting in front of computers. It follows the IEB curriculum, but includes additional lessons on coding, how to use social media, crypto, and blockchain. Centennial Schools is the brainchild of Sean Fuchs, who used his 31-year experience in education to reimagine what a high school should be. It was created as a result of the pandemic, combined with the challenges that South African educational systems face. He was previously managing director of Redham House Schools and general manager at Crawford College and at the Centurus Colleges Group. He was also headmaster at Crawford Lone Hill. The school believes that the last decade has highlighted how behind the times most teaching methods are. And it was the COVID-19 pandemic and lockdown that amplified the need for change. Do you remember we interviewed Sean? He wrote that book.
Yeah.
He wrote a book about his, I'm sure it's here somewhere. I'll find it. It's on my shelf somewhere. This guy is cool. We had him on the show, and he's a real forward-thinking kind of guy. So he started the Centennial School. And let me show you a picture of what it'll look like in this esports arena that they're going to put up. This looks very cool.
Ooh.
How do you like them apples?
This is nice.
Can I go back in time and become a 15-year-old? Because this?
Right.
I would want to go to school now. What?
So okay. I want to know.
I'm sold.
Now, I want to know how, my boring old school, which I was at, the closest we got to this was the PE teacher chasing us around the field to pick up rocks. It was like more like prison, more like prison than like school. But there it is. So that's Sean Fuchs, who is heading up Centennial Schools. Sounds like a very cool new idea. And you know what?
Yeah.
If it works, awesome. If it doesn't work, so
love
what?
It.
So what? It's just a different take. And don't tell me that kids have had the best time under lockdown anyway. So The more new ideas, the better. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for a little Africanalysis with JJ Cornish. Africanalysis is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, taking a look at what is happening in and around the African continent. And this morning, he joins us from Pretoria. JJ Cornish, how are you?
Bonjour, I'm exceedingly well, thanks. Any better, I'd have to tell the cops.
All right, JJ, so where can we begin today? There's lots to talk about, as always. Nigeria, which is always a focus of our attentions on the continent. Nigeria seems to scoop up a lot more of the attention than any other country, and for various reasons, some of them good, some of them bad, some of them absolutely terrible. Why is Nigeria in the news?
Well, you know, Nigeria is the most populous country, so it would have virtually the most stories. But this is dozens of people. In fact, 77 people rescued from a church in Ondo State in the southwest, waiting for the second coming of Christ. Well, they were told that they should be there and hang around in April and wait for this.
Yeah.
And they did a bit of hanging around, and nothing happened. They were told, well, it's actually been delayed now until September. And if you're smart, you behave, you believe and obey your heavenly beliefs and not your parents. Well, this is 26 children, 18 teenagers, 43 adults.
Sure.
And when they were rescued by the authorities, they looked quite bewildered. But, so, you know, this is the sort of thing. It's a religion in Nigeria, hugely important. As you know, this country is split with sort of 53.5% Islam and 45, nearly 50% Christians. And there's a bit of battling between the religions. We had the 40 people killed in a Christian church just earlier this year. So a religion, hugely, hugely important. And we know that from pastors here, and you know, South Africans who've actually died in badly, poorly built churches in Nigeria. But an interesting story here: suddenly, these people waiting, almost held captive in a church, believing that Christ would come again and choose the good from the bad and send the good to heaven, etc., etc. You know, the whole rapture thing.
And that's going to happen in Nigeria. So if Jesus does come back, he's going to go to Nigeria first. Is that that's the idea?
Well, this is where, you know, when you say lots of evil is done in the name of religion, in the name of politics, in the name of nationalism, if you're in a country that believes that this is where the rapture will be, I think you've got problems in terms of, you know, ultra-nationalism.
Yeah, well, not to mention the fact that if Jesus does come back and he ends up in Nigeria, he could be kidnapped, could end up working in the oil fields, he could end up, you know, being taken on by Boko Haram. It's not the greatest place if Jesus does decide to come back to land.
Unless, of course, he's really looking for some challenges, which might be the case. I don't think Galilee was a great place for him, you know, back
that's
then.
True.
So, you know, you wouldn't want him to come to a salubrious area of, you know, up in New York State or something.
It would be
he need to come somewhere where he can show that he's
too easy. He needs to exercise some of those miracles, and God knows Nigeria could do with some miracles. All right. So, but nobody's been hurt or nobody's starved to death or any of that stuff. It's just these people are basically holding themselves hostage inside this church, and it just doesn't sound like a very sensible way to spend months and months and months of your life.
Absolutely. But they've been rescued now. Whether or not they were, you know, filched for money or something, that will all come out. But they were all sort of blinking and not wondering what the authorities were doing, rescuing from this important time of their lives.
So JJ, Tabor is one of our listeners, and he says here, could you ask JJ to confirm the story in Nigeria? And I'm obviously just throwing this at you without any preparation, because this is Tabo's question. If you don't know, then just tell us. But he says, confirming the story of a beheading of a military couple in Imo State that has something to do with the IPOB and the ESN. Now, first of all, I don't know what the IPOB or ESN is, so maybe you can help us with that. But have you heard a story of the beheading of some military couple?
There was something. In fact, I mentioned it in a crossing I did maybe last week. There'd been a beheading. Yes, but I can't go into detail without, you know, without having someone doing more research. But yes, there certainly was the beheading of a military couple, and I don't think it was up in the northeast where. But I don't want to speculate too much. But certainly, did happen.
Okay, so Thabo, I'm afraid that's all we got for you now. But let's talk about Sierra Leone for a second, because they have just drafted a law decriminalizing abortion. Now, you know, we talk about America and how backward we think they are in some respects and how forward-thinking they are in others. And there are huge differences of opinion between Americans in red states and blue states about abortion. It was a big story with Roe v. Wade being thrown out by the Supreme Court and being declared a non-existent, unconstitutional right. A lot of Americans still very much up in arms about that. Plenty of very unhappy and angry people for various reasons. But here in Africa, there are many countries where abortions are still illegal. What is the situation in Sierra Leone, and how come they've decided to take this move to decriminalize abortion?
One important thing in Sierra Leone is that it has one of the highest maternal mortality rates on the planet. And the abortion law, the present abortion law, dates back to 1861.
Yo.
There was some law on in 2015 about allowing safe abortions, but the then president, Ernest Bai Koroma, he wanted to put that to a referendum. He just wasn't prepared to risk putting that on the statute books, wanted a referendum, and it never happened. So the current president, Julius Maada, he's very proudly told a convention on women's health and so on that they have passed this draft legislation and that they will decriminalize abortion. So it's interesting, going against the grain with the superpower, there's no doubt about that. But before you say, well, that's nice to see this kind of liberalization happening in Sierra Leone, please remember that male homosexuality is still illegal there. It's one of the 36 countries in Africa that criminalize homosexuality and punishable by life imprisonment.
Right.
But female homosexuality is legal. So, you know, there's contrasts and contradictions happening in that country, which of course has had, in the relatively recent past, a very difficult time. You remember a lot of killing and so on there. Maybe it's 2 decades ago now, but nevertheless, yeah. I remember a Sierra Leone saying, "He killed my ma, he killed my pa, so I kill him." You speak very strangely.
Well, I mean, that's like those vendettas that you get in some parts of the rest of the world. But it is interesting, like particularly on the east coast of Africa, there's still quite a lot of, I wouldn't call it homophobia, but I'd call it like very strict anti-gay legislation and anti-gay rules, and people who preach this stuff from the pulpit and people who preach this from the political stage. So we've got a long way to go before we can stop pointing at other people and start pointing at ourselves and fixing our own problems on this continent. South Africa, of course, has got quite a liberal constitution by comparison with the others, right, JJ?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, a gem of a constitution, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, in some of those countries in the East Coast where you would have expected them to have more sense, even when countries like Britain have said, no, not good enough, we're going to cut aid. Mm-hmm. You know, unless Uganda at one point wanted to, and still there are politicians in Uganda say that they want the death penalty for homosexuality.
Right.
And Britain said, well, that's it. You know, you even think about that and we're going to cut aid. Then the leaders have said, well, who do you think you are interfering with us? Mm-hmm. No, cut it then if you have to. So they would forego budgetary aid.
Right.
In order to maintain this. So it's a burning issue, you know.
Yeah, and it's something people in those countries feel very strongly about. But I do think it's interesting that, like, in some countries that lesbians are fine, but gay men are not. So, I mean, it just shows you there's also a bit of hypocrisy going on there. I wonder what that's about. All right, let's look at a story much more generally, a story about the United Nations, because Libya is still an absolute disaster, isn't it? I mean, there are a lot of places you don't want to be, but Libya is absolutely near the top of your list on African countries that are not really the most hospitable places to find yourself. What's going on over there? Because they've condemned the storming and the torching of the parliamentary building, Libyan parliamentary building in Tobruk. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel for Libya, JJ? Because since Muammar Gaddafi was deposed, famously, during Barack Obama's term as president of the United States, that place has just been in constant conflagration ever since. Is there any hope?
Well, I don't see it at this point, you know, and they're talking about elections, but there's been this absolute power vacuum, and there's parts of the country that are under the separation of the country and a sort of balkanization of the country. But this one, the main eastern city, Benghazi, and in Tobruk, there were massive, massive protests about the deteriorating conditions. Mm. And, you know, whatever Muammar Gaddafi, I went to Libya and we interviewed Muammar Gaddafi. Whatever he did, and it was nasty, you know, since his killing and since he's deposing, moving by the Western powers leading it, South Africa, of course, was a member of the Security Council at the time and agreed to the no-fly zone that eventually, you know, and agreed to the moves against Gaddafi because he was killing his own people, as it were. And then there were South African politicians who said we were led by the nose, by the West on this one. And I mean, those who argue that we didn't know what – the world didn't know what they were doing getting rid of Gaddafi because they didn't know what would replace him.
Yeah,
they make good sense. You know, if you're going to get into regime change, better you know – who's you're going to change the regime for. But anyway, these mobs or crowds in Benghazi and in Tobruk are complaining about the deteriorating living conditions. But most importantly, and we will identify with this in the Freedom-Loving People's Republic of South Africa, they are protesting about power cuts which run for 18 hours a day. God.
Wow.
Well, I mean, it's going to be another at least 10 days before ours are going to be that bad. But, you know, so we. But nevertheless, Benghazi and Tobruk, they marched down the street saying, give our power back, give our power back. It was nothing about political power. It was about electrical power. Sure. And that's when they marched on the parliament and set parts of it alight. Well, I think no politicians inside. No, I haven't heard of any injuries, but that is what the United Nations and duly condemned and should have condemned, because, you know, you can't have that kind of thing happen. But you can understand, we can begin to identify with the frustration of these people who cannot live a normal life. And of course, not to mention the violence and that sort of thing. Just the trying to live a normal life with how much is that? 6 hours of power a day.
Well, JJ, I mean, you mentioned something just now that is very controversial. A lot of people go, oh, well, you know, the world is better off without Muammar Gaddafi. And there's a good argument for that. We've all heard that argument. That argument was proffered by the U.S. administration under Obama when they decided, as Hillary Clinton said, to go in to see, to conquer. And that's exactly what they did. They took out Muammar Gaddafi, although he was taken out, it's fair to say, by people within Libya who had him in their crosshairs for a very long time. But it's amazing how when you take out some of these strongmen, the whole country falls apart under them. And for those people who would prefer order and rules, even if they're rules and order that are imposed by a terrible malevolent dictator, there's something to be said for these strongmen who keep things in place. I mean, Iraq is so many years later after Saddam Hussein still in flames and in constant flux and in real deterioration. Libya, same thing. There are countless other examples all over the world of just these power vacuums that are created when you take out these strongmen. And it may be worth a little more than a second glance when we start thinking about who we're going to take out and who we're going to remove from power, right?
One of the most serious examples is the DRC.
Yeah.
Now, our own Madiba decided that kleptocrat Mobutu Sese Seko had to go.
Yep.
And had to go at all costs. And what replaced Mobutu Sese Seko who there's no doubt was looting that country, mm-hmm. was Laurent Kabila. Yeah. Laurent Kabila, who was described by Che Guevara as a drunk and a whoremonger, and I mean he was an absolute disaster. Yeah. And I can remember a South African diplomat talking to me about this, saying exactly the phrase I used earlier: if you're going to change the regime, you had better know what you are going to change it for.
Right.
And that is why South Africa has its face set very, very heavily against any regime change, because of the lessons we learned out of the Congo, and because of those lessons underlined by lessons from Libya. So it is, you know, but who are you anyway to try to change the regime? There's no doubt that if somebody starts to set upon their own people, something has to be done. But, you know, this is why, for example, the African Union red cards any country that has an unconstitutional change of government, or should red card. Notable exceptions have been made. But nevertheless, you change a country without a government, without an election, remove someone, you're in for a world of pain, very, very big danger of one.
You almost said the African Union, like you took it seriously for a second there. I'm just, you know, that it's very sweet that you gave them any attention at all. Let me ask you this quickly, because you're always in diplomatic circles. You know all the people in foreign affairs, in our international relations here in South Africa. What do you think South Africa's main objectives are on the continent? Let's be serious for a second and not laugh about the AU. But what are our objectives on the continent? Because in some ways we've discussed that South Africa is a bit of a pariah. We're not really well liked by either Francophone Africa or even Anglophone Africa. A lot of them think we've got a bit of a superiority complex. Are we working hard on relations? We saw Cyril was in Botswana over the last couple of days. What are we actually doing on the continent to further the interests of South Africa and to try and create some level of cooperation with other African countries who should be our closest friends and who we should be in association with when it comes to things like international treaties, trade, all of this stuff? What are our foreign affairs priorities on the continent?
Well, really, we want African solutions to African problems. That is one of the things, and that has become something of a flutter word, you know, African solutions to African problems. And when we did have our Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma in as the president of the commission, African Union Commission, mm-hmm. she came up with a plan for Africa 50 years hence. And, you know, this African agenda 50 years from her time. And, I mean, I just think that is laughable for a politician to do that. I can give you some ideas about what, you know, should be happening to me or my family 50 years hence, because I'm going to be away with the fairies by then. So, you know, but what South Africa is doing, and it really is genuinely working very hard to make Africa more accountable to itself, to make governments more accountable. I have no doubt that South African diplomats are working very hard in this regard, to some extent, to some degree, even making their relations with Africa more important than their relations with their real development partners in the West. Now, you know, I will argue till the cows come home on that one. They will say, the most important place to be is Africa. We are Africans first and foremost. Let's get the continent going. But don't turn your back on the people who are helping you develop and helping the rest of Africa develop. But the point is, you know, we want an African standby force, for example. South Africa is very strong on that. So that if something happens, we can send troops in or peacekeepers into places quickly. Well, that's all very well, but in every case when the African Union wants to do this, somebody else has to pick up the tab, because the African Union doesn't have the money for it, and too many members of that union are not paying their contributions to the African Union. But, you know, I am one of those. I'm a multilateralist, inveterate multilateralist. So I'm one of those who argues for the United Nations. And many, many times I sit with counter arguments, you know, what do they get done? And they do prove to be absolutely toothless in many regards.
Right.
Well, I take a simple line on that. I believe it is better to have them than not to have them. And I believe that of the United Nations, just as I believe it of the African Union. And we as Africans, there is an inherent unity about us. You know, we believe in Africa and we are passionate about Africa. Maybe less so in South Africa than in other African countries.
You just look at the way we treat foreign nationals in this country, and I don't know whether that's true.
Well, that is something that's so hugely embarrassing to us. Yeah. Because look at us at the time, you know, when I was at the United Nations in the middle of the worst years of the apartheid regime, the middle of the Cold War, we were, you know, South Africans who fled South Africa for political reasons, for being persecuted, were put up in African countries and in other countries, but mostly African countries. And there they were at great cost to themselves and also great risk, because those chaps in the Mirages, you know, with the small angry black moustaches would shoot over the border and bomb them and kill them, but they still protected South Africans. And now that we get power in our country, we turn on the Makwerekwere with xenophobia.
Yeah.
No wonder that the ANC government won't call it xenophobia, just will only characterize it as criminality because it's too embarrassing to admit xenophobia.
I want us to touch on this when you come back in a couple of days' time, because Chris says, please ask JJ about the Madagascar gold smuggling incident. South Africa is currently banned from flying into Madagascar. That would be an interesting one to talk about in 2 weeks' time. I'm going to have to say goodbye to you, though, JJ. We're out of time for this morning. Thanks again for your contribution. It's always good to hear your insights in these things. Africa Analysis is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. We're looking at what happens on the continent. Always fascinating stuff. JJ, thank you. Cheers. There's JJ Cornish. All right, it is 7 o'clock, just after. We'll be back with a whole lot more in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. Cliffcentral.com. Cliffcentral.com.